As I was celebrating Thanksgiving a couple of days ago, it was fixed in my mind one single thought. What exactly does it mean, the American dream? We live in a country which embraces capitalism and certain freedoms guaranteed by the United States Bill of Rights, including freedom of religion. We certainly have much to be thankful for as far as our ability to be able to serve Hashem in this particular country that we live in the United States. But the American dream implies more than the Bill of Rights or capitalism. It implies a successful and satisfying life, which usually implies financial security, material comfort, perhaps dream of fame, and living a fulfilling life. As I was there, stuffing my face with turkey, gravy, and good old pumpkin pie, I began to wonder, what exactly is the Jewish philosophy of this, of the American dream? What does the Torah have to say about it, and how I'm supposed to celebrate Thanksgiving? As I often do, to answer the questions that come to me, I turn to the Torah, specifically the Torah reading of the week, Parshas Toldos. Parshas Toldos, we find an unbelievable story. The story of two children who seem to be complete opposites, Yaakov and Esav. And it was the time for one of them to receive the bracha. However, Esav was busy traveling, busy hunting for his father. And there was Yaakov, dressed the part, standing in front of his father. The Torah tells us, Vayomer Yitzchak el beno, he said to his child, Mazeh mi'hartelim so b'ni, how'd you get here so fast? I sent you out only a little while ago. Seems like fast food over here. Vayomer and his child said, Ki hikara Hashem lokech lefanai, I'll tell you how I got here. God hastened my way. He prepared this for me, that I'd be able to serve it in a fast and timely manner. And he couldn't believe the words that his child said. But Yomer Yitzchak Yaakov, and he told his child, Gishana, come close to me. Vamushcha b'ni, this way I can feel you, although I can't see. At least the sense of touch I still have. Ha'atazeb b'ni, Esav imlo. I need to find out, is this really Esav? Perhaps it's an imposter. Maybe it's someone else. And Rashi tells us, what was it that was bothering Yitzchak? What prompted Yitzchak to say to come close? It seemed as though Yitzchak himself was suspicious that it wasn't Esav. And Rashi tells us that Omer Yitzchak Belibo, that Yitzchak felt, Ein derech Esav Leo Shem Shemayim Shag Raviv. It's not the way of my child Esav to say the names of God, the Shem Shemayim, the names of heaven. And this person who's standing before me said, Ki yikar Hashem Elokecha. Furthermore, this child, he spoke in Lashon Tachanunim in a very nice way. He said, Kumna, please get up, please sit down. But Esav, whenever he spoke to me, he spoke in a very commanding manner. He never said please. He never spoke nicely. And therefore, this doesn't sound like my child. Doesn't sound like my child Esav. One has to wonder that just as Yitzchak knew about his own child, that he was not polite, and that he did not speak spirituality and godliness from his tongue, certainly Yaakov must have known this about his own brother. Why would Yaakov then have been willing to speak, even for a few moments, like his brother Esav? Why couldn't he just do that? After all, by speaking in a harsh manner, it would remove the suspicion from Yitzchak, and he'd be able to easily receive the bracha. Why was Yaakov willing to risk it all by speaking the exact same way that he always did? But the storyline gets even more difficult. Because afterwards, after he feels his hands, he says the most famous sentence in our parsha, Hakol kol Yaakov bo yadai mi Esav. You know, this person in front of me, on one hand, he feels like my son Esav. However, his voice, he sounds like my son Yaakov. Yitzchak is clearly saying, I am confused. I don't know who this person is in front of me. But nonetheless, immediately afterwards, he gives a bracha. But why did Yitzchak do this? Why couldn't he have called a servant, or possibly his wife, anyone, to give him clarity of the situation, to be able to find out exactly who this person was, whether it's Esav, or maybe someone else? Perhaps the most difficult question, a question that many perhaps gloss over, is the significance of our avos and our imos. We have avos, three of them, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And we know that Avraham is matched to his spouse, to our matriarch, to Sarai Menu. Yitzchak to Rivka. But for some reason, we have two matriarchs, Leah and Rachel, for one child for Yaakov. And one must wonder, why is it that we have three avos and four mothers? Shouldn't it be equal, four and four? And the answer is, it was supposed to be. We were supposed to have, just like four imos, four matriarchs, we were supposed to have four avos, four fathers. And who was our fourth forefather we were supposed to have? Esav. Now, although that sounds difficult to fathom, it's actually something which is found directly in the Torah, directly in the Talmud. The Torah tells us that Laban had two daughters. One of their names was Leah, and the other was Rachel. And Rachel was a beautiful girl, Yifas Toar, Yifas Mare. But the Torah says that Eini Le Rakos, that her eyes were very weak, very weepy, and very teary. And the Talmud wonders, how could we speak negatively about such a perfect person, such a great woman, such as Leah? And the Talmud tells us that Leah understood, Shekol Omrim, that everyone said, Shnei Banim LaRivka, that Rivka has two sons, Ushnei Banos LaLavan, and Lavan has two daughters, Hagadol LaGadol, Vakatan LaKatan. The younger one will go to the younger. Yaakov will marry Rachel, and I, Leah, must marry Esav. What is the significance of this? It was understood that Leah and Rachel, who were going to be our imos, who were our mothers, we were also supposed to have Yaakov and, yes, Esav. Because what was supposed to happen was a dual role, a partnership between the two of them. Just like we find by Yisachar and Zebulun, this is how the relationship of Yaakov and Esav was supposed to play out. That Yaakov was going to be the spiritual man, the one who would teach Torah to the masses. And Esav would also have a vital role in Klal Yisrael. He would be the person who is involved in material matters, making sure our comfort, making sure that all of our physical needs are taken care of. However, we find that this was not meant to be. V'yisrotzitzu habanim b'kirba, that even at the very beginning, even in utero, Yaakov and Esav could not function together. They could not be a team. It was then understood by everyone that since Yaakov and Esav could no longer be a team, only one of the two children could accept the dual role of a future leader for the Jewish people, for the Bnei Israel. But who would be the most qualified? Yaakov, on one hand, was certainly spiritually enough, but he was not worldly, as he was a Yoshev O'Halim. Esav was certainly a worldly man. He was an Ish Sayyid, but he wasn't spiritual. He wasn't spiritual at all. And therefore, the Torah tells us that the parents had different perspectives. V'yehav Yitzchak es Esav, v'rivko heves es Yaakov. That Yitzchak looked at his son Esav and said, I prefer him. How could it be that these great people prefer, they have favoritism for in their own household, they love one child over the other? It's not that they love one over the other. But Yitzchak and Rivka differed in who should be the next leader, the one who should take over the reins of Klal Yisrael for the Jewish nation. Who has the ability to share this dual role within themselves as a spiritual leader and also a material leader, someone who's able to control the world, the outside? And Yitzchak looked at his son Esav and said, I know that he is a very worldly man. All he needs to do is to incorporate spirituality, and then he will be able to be the next leader. However, Rivka looked at this child and said, this is not possible. Rather, Yaakov, who is a spiritual man, all I need to do is to cultivate within him the ability to become a great leader, to be someone who can go outside and be proactive. And this, therefore, was the whole meaning, the meaning of the bracha, that the bracha could only be given, only given to a person, to a child, who is able to have both of these qualities. Which explains why it was necessary that the Torah tells us that Yitzchak on his deathbed was telling Esav, that you should go out and hunt. Make for me the delicacies that I love, and I'll eat from them, so I'll be able to give you a blessing. And one could understand what exactly is going on. Why is it necessary for Yitzchak to eat a little bit of food before he gives the bracha? And Rashi tells us an amazing feat. Amazing thing. It tells us that what Yitzchak was asking from his son Esav was a spiritual pursuit. That when he would go and to try to find some meat, shotachlein in the vela, make sure that the meat that you give me is slaughtered properly. That it should not be a carcass, it should be not a nevela, non-kosher meat. And Rashi continues and says, make sure it's been a hefker, it's ownerless food. Flum and a gezel, don't steal it. The message that Yitzchak is teaching his son Esav is the only way that you can receive the bracha is not only if you go out and conquer the world, but you have to be able to remember spirituality and your religion at the same time. That when you can go out and you can hunt, and you're also sensitive to the fact that it has to be something which is within the guidelines of kashrus, within the guidelines of not stealing from another person, then I'll see that you would have in fact have both qualities, and therefore you'll be able to accept the bracha of being the future of Klal Yisrael. And once it happened that this child stood before Yitzchak, we heard the words of God, and we heard, please. And the reason why Yaakov said Hashem's name and said, please, was because he understood that it was necessary for Esav also to begin to accept this spiritual connection before he also would have been able to grant any bracha. And therefore it was necessary to go and speak in this way so that his father would be willing to give the bracha. And once Yitzchak heard, when he heard the names of God, he needed to see that indeed this was his beloved child, his son Esav, who had finally, after so many years, finally had changed to a life of spirituality. And he says the words, Hakol kol Yaakov v'yadayim yidei Esav. Now I can give you a bracha. Because now I see you have both qualities. You are the yadayim yidei Esav, of course, you are the man, the worldly man. But you have now incorporated in your life the kol Yaakov, the spirituality. And therefore you can now be the future of Klal Yisrael. However, Yitzchak began to realize it wasn't Esav there. It wasn't Esav who adapted the spiritual qualities of Yaakov. Instead, it was Yaakov Avinu himself. Yaakov who stepped out of his shell and became more active and more worldly and was able to take upon himself this quality of Esav. And it was because of this, and only because of this, that he began the bracha given by Yitzchak. I believe that this is a very important message, a message for the committed modern American Jew. We all seek, and to a large extent, have been granted the blessings that American culture has to offer. We have taken our place in the forefront of American society, and we're proud of it. And sometimes, in order to achieve these blessings, we, to some extent, adopt, figuratively and literally, the garments, the outer veneer of the general culture that surrounds us. But Yaakov Avinu is teaching us a very important lesson. That Yadayim Yidei Esav, being a worldly man, adopting the American culture is not enough. We must equally embrace the Kol Yaakov, to never eliminate the Shem Shemayim, Hashem's name from the picture. No matter what, we cannot compromise our spiritual belief. This is the Jewish perspective of the American dream. And to be able to live in a country where we're able to have both the Kol Yaakov and the Yadayim Yidei Esav. So as we sit on Thanksgiving and we eat our turkey and we have our pumpkin pie, there's nothing wrong with that. But before we do so, we must stand up and wash our hands and say the bracha v'al netil t'adayim and to take a morsel of bread and make hamotzi. And after our Thanksgiving feast, to say Birchat HaMazon, to thank Hashem, to thank Him for living in a country, in a time of our lives, where not only are we able to be the Yadayim de Esav, to be able to go out into our world, but also to freely practice the Kol Yaakov. When a person is able to have both dual roles in their life, on a Thanksgiving or any day of the year, that's truly something worth being thankful about. Good Shabbos.